like to do is begin at the beginning, like when either when you were born or when you moved to Detroit, and just start there, and let you just tell me about anything that interests you along the way.
Well, I was born in Detroit.
Okay.
Born in September 25th, 1925, Herman Kiefer Hospital. My father was a waiter, and my mother was unemployed. And we lived on various streets off of Hastings Street, like Benton, Wilkins, and I don't have much memory of my father because he worked a great deal. He worked as a waiter in order to make extra money. I found out from an oral interview with my mother, he would clean up after work. And so, and he died in 1930 of TB. I still remember playing on the street. And my mother came from Hastings, from the Hastings streetcar line. And when I ran up to her, she was crying. Shortly after that, my father was dead. And in those days, they had the, they brought the body to the home.
Right.
And so,
I'm supposed to press this button or something?
No, the top. You can squeeze the top.
Okay.
I mean, turn the top, yeah.
Okay, I did it.
Mm-hmm. You do it. And so, that set in motion a number of events that I remember, like taking the train. My father was from the rural part of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I found out he ran away from home when he was about 12 years old.
Mm.
And he...
And did he stay and ran away? I mean, he didn't go back?
No, he didn't go back. In fact, as my mother tells it, he was reared by, I think he found a preacher that liked him and took him under his wing in Atlanta. And was going by the name of Norman Stone, probably after the preacher. And my mother used to nose around in his drawers, and she found out that he had a family in Georgia, and she contacted him, and they had a reunion before he died. He went down there, and then when he died, she took him home to bury him, which was, in many ways, a practice that they did.
Mm-hmm.
And
when he died, was that devastating to you? Or?
Well, I didn't know too much about it.
Yeah, because you hadn't seen him.
Four.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're four, you don't understand death as such.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
The only one. So we went to took him home to Ely, Georgia, as in Alvin Ely.
Okay.
And it's all about 30 miles from Macon, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather was a well-to-do farmer who owned a lot of land.
Mm-hmm.
And but the thing that I remember most vaguely, but I still remember, was how you had to change trains, and we had to change trains a lot, it seemed, and then we'd have to wait for the casket to be taken off and transferred. And I can remember standing on this platform someplace in the south. It was about 5 in the morning, and it was jet black. And as we stood there, I saw the dawn come up. That was the first time I ever experienced that phenomenon, you know. And, yeah, I, don't think I asked any questions about it, but I remembered it. And we buried him, and we came back to Detroit. And then I attended Falk School, which is now
Gar-Lightley,
mm-hmm. in Garfield. And I was my mother worked in Grosse Pointe as a maid, and we stayed with relatives. And I was such a problem kid. So the summer of 1934, my mother sent me down to Birmingham, Alabama. She was from the industrial south. She came from Birmingham, so I went down to Birmingham and stayed with my aunts and uncle. And then while I was there, I received a letter that you're going to have a stepfather.
Mm-hmm.
And so we moved to Saginaw. I came back, we got to Saginaw in September of 1934. And I stayed there 10 years. I had a stepfather. And my mother and stepfather had 5 additional children, 2 boys and 3 mm-hmm. girls. And I stayed, but all the time I stayed there, I would come back to Detroit to visit relatives.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I had an aunt, Mrs. Etta Morris, who was very instrumental in my life, in that she had a lot of discretionary funds that she would spend on me.
That's good.
She would buy me back to school stuff. And so I would always go back to Saginaw with a part of Hudson's. Saginaw had a different school. School had more meaning for me in Saginaw, Michigan. One of the reasons was that it was a self-contained classroom.
Okay.
It was not a platoon system. And I can remember my first 3 teachers, well, 4 really. Something happened to me. I got put back from the 5th grade to the 4th grade. There was this teacher. My first teacher was Mrs. Shaw. And she passed me on to the 5th grade with a teacher by the name of Mrs. Hankey. So I couldn't do long division, so she put me back in the 4th grade, and I had a teacher by the name of Mrs.
Okay. Still running?
So
I'll try here.
Right here. By Mrs. O'Grady.
Mm-hmm.
And then my last teacher, my 6th grade teacher, was Mrs. Barnacle. And these, well, there was no such thing as a black teacher in Saginaw mm-hmm. at that time. And they were very kind, nurturing, and good teachers. Then I left the confines of the first ward in Saginaw, where most black, you had mostly blacks, Mexicans, and poor whites. And I went out into the wider world of Central Junior High School, which was in a very solid middle class neighborhood. I was very much aware of race, because I remember one time, the time I was going down south in 1934, people had trunks in those days. And I remember my cousin had gotten a guy, Richard Morrison, to use his coal hauling truck, to take my trunk down to Michigan Central Station, and they were talking about lynchings, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember my mother telling me that when I got on the train in Detroit, I would very much aware of that. In Saginaw, it was a very seminal experience for me. I think much of my success today is because I grew up there as opposed to Detroit. In junior high school, I was a pretty good student. One interesting thing happened. In the seventh grade, I was getting C's and D's and everything, but I was getting E's in social studies.
Well, that's appropriate.
And Walter Luther was a great, great teacher. And I heard about it from another teacher because he was telling me how Mr. Lucret had gone to bat for me. And then they had a conference about weak students and those that they wanted to retain. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so he went to bat and said how great I was, et cetera, et cetera. Now everybody was amazed that I would be doing that poorly. But I really didn't care about the other.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I became a better student. But not very great in math and science. I held my own, but I mean, I could pass, but mm-hmm. I was not a star. But I was good in English and history and stuff like that. In high school, I was a star athlete, football and track. In Saginaw.
Now you're still in Saginaw.
Saginaw High.
Mm-hmm.
And I observed a very interesting phenomenon. I knew the difference between blacks and whites, but I did not realize that there some whites were more equal than other whites.
Mm-hmm.
And I understood that the Polish people were on the lower part of the scale.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting story because when I was in high school, there was a guy by the name of Tony Pobalas who was an all-star football, basketball, and baseball star.
Mm-hmm.
And he was dating a girl by the name of Barbara Morley. Morley Saginaw is like the name Ford here.
Okay.
They owned the bank, lumber yard, Warner Brothers store, and several other lucrative enterprises. And you know, they were the country club people. And I remember Al Miller, who himself was a kid from the country club. His mother was a Warner, by the way, yeah. And so Al said, telling another guy, I said, Barbara Morley can't date Tony Pobalas anymore. And I said, why? And Al said to me, because he's Polish. And also, I got to be friends with a guy by the name of Franklin Pulaski. Franklin was Jewish. In the seventh grade, I remember we were in the same, I can't remember the lady's name, but she was an old racist broad, and she was taking role in Franklin Pulaski. And some kid said, well, teacher, today is his holiday. He has to be. I said, well, why can't those people have holidays like everybody else? And so, and Franklin and I became buddies. And we worked at the post in high school. We worked at the post office part time. And one of the, I think there was one or two of us black guys, Franklin, and the rest of the guys were white guys. One guy, I still remember his name, Muhlenbeck. We used to call him Guts Muhlenbeck. He used to go around calling Frank Ike the Kike. And he tried to get me to do it. And I said, well, I said to Frank, what's this Ike the Kike? He says, no, it's just like somebody calling in here. I said, oh, I understood. So those were very, as I say, important years for me because high school was very important. you were black in Saginaw, you didn't have much going for you. And I knew at an early age that when I graduated from high school, I was going to go to college, and I would never live in Saginaw again. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that helped me a great deal was this aunt I told you about.
Mm-hmm.
Lived at 411 King, and that was in the heart of the black bourgeoisie section, right?
Ah.
Geraldine Bledsoe Ford, the family, okay. And the Bledsoe family, very dear friends of mine.
Mm-hmm.
They lived two doors from us.
Okay.
A doctor lived, Dennis lived next door, doctor across the street, Dennis, and Mr. Bledsoe was a lawyer. So I knew that if I wanted to achieve anything, I would have to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like all young black males, they understand that if you're going to be successful, you have to be a doctor or maybe a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a lawyer, you know, so I came out of them, I used to mouth things like I'm going to become a doctor, but it was unrealistic because I wasn't that green in science, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I graduated from Saginaw High in 1944. And then went off to the service. And I'd heard about segregation, et cetera. And sure enough, we had segregation in Saginaw, too.
Mm-hmm.
But not as blatant, you know. I knew that. Because I can remember, I'd forgotten it, but years later, in talking to a buddy of mine, I remember playing football in Owosso, Hales football. And we, after the game, we went to this restaurant to eat. And I was the only black on the football team. And the guy wouldn't serve us. The coach said, mm-hmm. said that he would come in, but he couldn't. I didn't hear that. I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed, I remember the incident, going to the restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and then we went someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why we did that, because this guy mm-hmm. wouldn't serve because of me.
Mm-hmm.
And years later, a friend of mine, who lives in California, we were talking about it. He told me why, and I said, well, yeah, he was talking about how angry everybody had gotten, but nobody said anything. They were very protective of me. So
mm-hmm.
That's, you know, I was used to that kind of stuff. But when I went in the service, and blatant segregation and segregation in the armed forces, I wasn't quite prepared for. I've been a fairly popular young man because of football and track and being in the college prep. And I can remember coming home from Saginaw and Bob Weber's wife, or she was, maybe she's engaged, she saw me in the bank and she hugged me and I almost jumped out of my skin because of the omnipresence of race
mm-hmm.
in Virginia, where I'd gone to Hampton mm-hmm. Institute for a naval training
mm-hmm.
school.
Now, who was Bob Weber?
He's a guy who played football.
Okay.
His girlfriend. And then, after the service, I wanted to go to the University of Michigan.
Stop. Go back to the service. When you said there was blatant segregation.
Oh, so yeah.
Where were you stationed?
I was in the Navy. I did my basic training at Great Lakes at Camp Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, I went to Naval because I scored high on the test. I went to Naval Training School at Hampton Institute in Hampton, Virginia. And Hampton Institute was a very beautiful place. It was a nice place. But once you walked out of those gates, you were the laws of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so gotcha. You know, like you had to ride in the back of the streetcar. You had to. We used to go to a place called Phoebus, the Lee Theater, where we had to sit in the balcony. Some guys from the north wouldn't do it, you know. But I said, you know, I'm only hurting myself because I sure can't change the laws.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good experience. And then I was sent overseas to Hawaii. And over there, it's the same thing. The blacks lived in a place called Manana Barracks, and the whites lived some other place. And most of the guys there were laborers. good thing I tested well. I was able to get a better job. Mm-hmm. And so...
was there discrimination in terms of how you were treated in the service?
Oh, yeah.
In what way?
Well, it was worse in the Army in the South. But any number of men who were beaten up because they wouldn't get to the back of the bus,
mm-hmm.
or because they talked back to a sheriff. You know,
mm-hmm.
I have a friend who's a doctor.
But this was like not in the military, it was in the town.
In the town, okay. And the military, okay. Too. One of the great ironies of World War II is that when we started taking German and Italian prisoners,
mm-hmm.
and bringing them to this country and putting them at various places. In some places in the South, the black guys guarding them, the prisoners had more rights than the black guys guarding them.
Mm-hmm.
They could go to the white PX.
Mm-hmm.
They could go to the white base.